Good morning. As was already mentioned, my discussion today describes changes in health indices and health behaviors in patients after attending a childhood cancer survivor clinic. And this is a secondary data analysis of patients attending health education, research, and outcomes for survivors, or HEROES Clinic, we like to call it, at Yale University School of Medicine. I have nothing to disclose. For some background, the good news is that as a result of successful cancer treatment, there are more childhood cancer survivors than ever before. Of the 12,000 children diagnosed with cancer every year in the United States annually, approximately 80% will be long-term cancer survivors. Currently, there are an estimated 270,000 adults who are childhood cancer survivors, and by the year 2015, it's projected that 1 in 500 adults will be childhood cancer survivors. The not-so-good news is that these successful cancer therapies are toxic and lead to cancer treatment-related complications. Approximately 70% of childhood cancer survivors will develop a chronic or delayed medical condition. Examples include early adult onset of cardiovascular disease and cerebral vascular disease, hypertension, dyslipidemia, obesity and insulin resistance, osteoporosis, subsequent malignancies, and dental problems. In addition, up to 50% of these survivors are unaware of the possibility or risk of developing one of these complications at an early age, despite over 90% of them receiving regular primary medical care. Furthermore, some survivors are practicing unhealthy behaviors, which would hasten the development of or exacerbate these cancer treatment-related complications. 53% of survivors have reported not meeting CDC guidelines for exercise, with 23% reporting physical inactivity. 32% reported smoking tobacco by age 40, with 17% currently admitting to smoking. And only 60% reported having seen a dentist in the past year. This study is to determine whether childhood cancer survivors who are at risk for long-term complications benefit from attending a specialty clinic that is designed to obtain targeted health screening and provide targeted health education based on the cancer treatment-related risks of each individual survivor. The HEROES Clinic is a specialty childhood cancer survivor clinic at Yale University in New Haven, Connecticut. It cares for patients who are diagnosed with cancer at less than 20 years of age, who are greater than 3 years from their cancer diagnosis and have no evidence of their primary cancer. This retrospective study consisted of survivors who attended their initial HEROES Clinic visit between 2003 and 2009, and had two or more annual HERO Clinic visits. Data obtained from the first and second HEROES visit for each patient included a medical record review and cancer treatment summary. Based on this information, targeted health screening was performed at each visit and compared. And the screening was done based on Children's Oncology Group guidelines, which are a national cooperative of over 90% of pediatric oncology programs, and it's derived from evidence-based medicine. Based on the risk of complications from prior cancer therapy, health behaviors were recorded and health education was given to each individual. An example of risk-based or targeted screening and education based on prior cancer treatment is shown here. The patient was given corticosteroids as part of their chemotherapy. That patient's at risk for early onset osteopenia or osteoporosis. Therefore, a baseline bone mineral density scan is recommended. History of the patient's current physical activity and nutrition is obtained, and education regarding age-appropriate exercise and nutrition is given verbally and in a handwritten summary letter. Patients who receive corticosteroids are also at risk for glaucoma and cataracts at an earlier age. Documentation from an ophthalmologist within the past year is obtained, and continual ophthalmology visits are recommended, and if appropriate, referrals are made. This study looked at a set of health indices and behaviors that could impact a survivor's already increased risk of treatment-related complications. A comparison of measurements and behaviors between the first visit and the second visit was obtained. Overall, a measurement or behavior was considered to be unchanged if it remained either healthy at the first visit and at the second, or if it was unhealthy at the first visit and second. A measurement or behavior was considered worsened if it had been healthy or beneficial at the first visit but unhealthy at the second, and conversely, a measurement or behavior that was unhealthy at the first visit and became beneficial healthy at the second was considered improved. For body mass index, unhealthy was considered to be calculated a value of greater than or equal to 25, and improvement was only recognized if the BMI was actually below 25 by the second clinic visit. Normal lipid profiles that became abnormal by the second visit were considered worsened, and abnormal serum lipid profiles at the first visit that became completely normal by the second visit were considered improved. Patients who had normal bone density scans prior to the first HEROES clinic visit, which had become abnormal by the second visit, were considered worsened, whereas those that were abnormal before the first visit and became normal at the second visit were considered improved. Similarly, self-reported behaviors were compared between the first and second HEROES visit. Those patients who did not use tobacco ever at the first visit or were not currently using tobacco at the first visit but admitted to tobacco use by the second visit were considered worsened, while those that had smoked or were currently using tobacco at the first visit but no longer reported it at the second visit for the past year, they were considered improved. Those patients that stopped practicing sun protection or avoided sun beds by the second visit were defined, or actually did go to sun tanning beds by the second visit were defined as worsened, while those that started sun protection were defined as improved, and those that did not continue to exercise by the second visit were categorized as worsened, while those that started exercising had improved. Referral compliance was confirmed by contacting an individual's dentist, ophthalmologist, or primary care physician, or checking their health insurance status. Those patients that did not continue to see a dentist every 6 months, or who did not have an ophthalmology visit annually, or a primary care physician yearly, or lost their health insurance were defined as worsened within each of these categories, and those that started to comply with these recommended visits and obtain health insurance were defined as improved. And here are our results. Of the 113 patients in the study, 58% were female and 80% were Caucasian. The mean age of cancer diagnosis was 6.8 years old. 39% of the survivors had leukemia. That was the most common cancer diagnosis, followed by lymphoma, Wilms tumor, bone cancers, and brain tumors, among other diagnoses. 49% of survivors received chemotherapy only, while 30% received chemotherapy and radiation, and the remainder received radiation or surgery alone. These demographics are comparable with national data from the Children's Cancer Survivor Group, which is a cohort of over 4,000 childhood cancer survivors and their siblings. The mean age at our first HEROES visit was 18 years old, and the mean time between the first and second visits was about 1.4 years. Most patients in the studies had fairly good resources at their initial HEROES visit. 58% had a household income above the median for Connecticut based on the 2000 census. 93% were already receiving regular primary medical care with one or more annual visits, and 96% had health insurance. Here are our results and the changes observed between the first and second HEROES visit for these three health indices. The first columns list the actual health measurements. The second column indicates the number of patients that were screened for these measures. Remember that not all 113 patients were screened for each measure because it's based on each individual's prior cancer treatment exposure risks. The next column is the percent with no change, followed by the percent worsened and the percent improved. Body mass index improved in 3.5%, that's in the last column there, while 2.7% worsened. Similarly, there was a slightly greater number of patients improving their serum lipid profiles to normal by the second visit, 6.2%, compared to 4.1% that worsened, and bone mineral density improved in 4.3%, while none worsened. Self-reported behaviors that showed a higher percent improvement than worsening included tobacco avoidance, 6.1 versus 2.7%, and exercise, 15% improved versus 13.2% that worsened by the second HEROES visit. However, sun protection was evenly split between 8% that improved and 8% that worsened. Unfortunately, most patients worsened compared to improved in complying with attendance for either their biannual dental visits, 8.1% had improved versus 12.1% had worsened, and the ophthalmology visits annually, only 15% improved versus 19% worsened, despite our education and appropriate referrals from the HEROES clinic to these subspecialists. However, the survivors were noted to show significant improvement in seeing a primary care physician annually, 5.3% improved compared to 1.7, and attaining health insurance, 4.4% improved and none worsened, both of which the HEROES clinic assisted their survivors in attaining. Another way to look at this is whether the HEROES Clinic increased beneficial or healthy behaviors is with this graph of the prevalence of beneficial health behaviors at the first and second visit. The first is in blue and the second's in red. This percent of patients is on the y-axis and the beneficial health behaviors is on the x-axis. And for health indices, the bone density was healthy or normal in 46% at the first visit, and it increased up to 50% by the second visit. Similarly, there are slight increases of normal body mass index and serum lipid profiles between the first and second visits. Beneficial or healthy self-reported behaviors included a 2% increase in age-appropriate exercise and a 4% increase in tobacco avoidance, whereas there was no change in sun protection at 78% reporting protection. Again, compliance with an ophthalmologist and dentist decreased while compliance with a primary care physician and health and attaining health insurance nearly approached 100% of our patients. Demographic characteristics that related to healthier beneficial behaviors included a younger age of cancer diagnosis showing a greater percentage of patients with improved normal bone mineral density, a younger age at HEROES visit showing a greater percentage of patients with improved or normal or healthy BMI and lipid profiles, and those patients with health insurance, particularly federal insurance, had at the first visit were more likely to comply with dental and ophthalmology visits. So in conclusion, the targeted or individualized screening and education based on prior cancer treatment exposures helps some survivors prevent harmful health-related behaviors associated with long-term cancer treatment complications. Despite the majority of these patients seeing a primary care physician regularly and having health insurance, this study discovered asymptomatic abnormal health measurements and unhealthy or harmful behaviors. And by addressing these findings with the individual at risk, with appropriate health education and referrals, there was a trend for improved health measures and behaviors. I think that's it. Thank you.
Thank you to all the presenters for very focused, good presentations. And we now have time, we now have about 15, 20 minutes for questions. So if there's people that would like to ask a question. Yes, in the back. We looked at social support as who do you share your survivorship experience with, but also if they're attending support groups or in contact with other survivors that they had met through that venue. So kind of more informal there. See, I had a question for Cindy, and that is, could you describe what the mentors actually do?
After they've been through their training, they are matched with a newly diagnosed patient. So a patient calls into our service. We do an intake form with the patient to understand their diagnosis, their treatment, their concerns, what they want to speak to a peer mentor about, and we get a sense of personality, stage of life, where they're at. And then we match them with one or two mentors that fit the treatment protocol or stage of life or all those components together. Surgery is often, the type of implants, especially in breast cancer. So those surgery options tend to be one of the most asked questions, and we match them up on that.
And then what do they do?
They actually call and speak with the women to answer questions. And oftentimes it's just a place to voice concerns, fears, understand what the mentor went through as a survivor, and help support. It's really another option to the traditional support program, you know, support groups, more on a one-on-one basis.
To provide resources too, with this, yeah. To provide resources as well, if a patient is newly diagnosed and is living through this experience, they may not have the information or the resources that they need to navigate their journey through.
Well, one of the things I was wondering is that one of your findings was that one of the things they were least happy with was the match. And I just wondered what that meant.
That was on the mentor side.
Right.
They had been appropriately matched with the patient based upon some other factor. And so that tells me that we need to do a little better job understanding and making that match.
Okay.
I just wanted to follow up. Is this a telephone encounter?
These are mostly telephone. Sometimes the ladies develop such a wonderful relationship that they end up getting the coffee. Sometimes our mentors will go to a doctor's visit or a radiation visit or accompany them to chemotherapy. It's really, the relationship develops based upon the needs of both parties.
And one thing we found was that there was a difference in the need for information between the breast cancer patients and the gynae patients. The gynae patients weren't following up, did not respond to the phone calls, whereas the breast cancer patients did. And we assumed, and I was at a presentation just recently at another conference where they're doing similar study with gynae patients, and they find that the response is from them. And so we assumed that the talk of breast cancer is so common these days. There's so much literature, it's more discussed in the public, in the society, and with friends and things, whereas gynae cancer still is more private, and it's more acute, so that there was more recurrence, so women did not have a chance to reflect themselves and find the support. They were already through all of the recurrence of the treatment and everything so fast that they didn't have time to catch breath and actually talk support
and reach out.
Yeah. So those are some of the things that we'll have to see if we can improve on and do that much better.
Yes.
Just going further, with either of the breast cancer programs, did your training modules include any content on women with breast cancer having a conversation with daughters about family history or concerns of daughters for their own future possible elevated risk of breast cancer?
That's a good point. No, that happens more informally, but it was not a part of the training module in our program.
Not particularly in ours. We have some other programs that focus on hereditary cancers, genetic risk, so it's not such a focus on that. But if somebody was in a workshop and it came up, it'd certainly be something that facilitators want to bring up and have this conversation.
And that's a good point, because that's something that they talk about prevention, right? And being to teach the community. So health promotion and prevention is a component, is a module.
Differentiation of inherited risk of the BRCA mutation versus just family history, that is one of many variables that increase risk over the lifetime.
Or just the
next generation.
Yeah. Or even just encouraging screening, regular screening, which is part of it. So
timely screening.
Yeah. We found a lot of interesting. We were just discussing that earlier as to what are we going to do with it and when are we going to do that. So we have a new session coming up in next spring. So we'll be able to incorporate all of these and then maybe bring some other health professionals in order to enhance the communication part, which is what we found was that the follow-up of that systematic follow-up. So if somebody did return the call, how much time did they give that person? ready at that time to talk, or were grieving themselves, but a second phone call may have been the readiness or the timing may have been there. So those are some of the things that
I had a question for Dr. Hogan in terms of the evaluation of the HEROES program. Was there any attempt to document the extent of complications that were identified? Because there might be longer term impacts on health that might not show up.
That was my first part of the research, which was presented in Williamsburg at a childhood cancer survivor program.
Okay.
Meeting. And yes, we picked up a lot of asymptomatic or people who had mild symptoms of cardiovascular disease, neurocognitive deficits, bone demineralization. We had, everything, pulmonary function abnormalities. So these are people who are already seeing their doctors, 30 and 40 years old, and not being screened. We saw an increase in hypolipidemia. So yes, we did. And I did present that data here because...
No, that's understandable.
I have a question on Dr. Burton. What was the age of the participants in the mean age of the participants? First question. The second question was, how long did the participants, how long did they live in the home after they coming to the program?
So of the 60 who died who were included in this study, the average age was 77 or 78. Mm-hmm. And they lived for about a year from when they initially presented. But that's sort of abnormal because they presented at a lot more advanced stage than they would in a general community.
And could you also, do you have any other information on the length of time in hospice care? And was that better or worse than what we see nationally?
So it was a little bit better than what we see nationally. There were there was a smaller proportion of men who enrolled for less than a week.
Okay.
And then as far as people who enrolled for more than 6 months, because that's also considered too long of a time, that was about 20% in our program, which is again better than the general population, but still not perfect.
Okay.
And when you say that there was more aggressive treatment towards for end of life once diagnosed with the end of life cancer, we were just preparing curriculum for nurses actually, and we found that the families more so in your literature search when you were doing that, did you find that the family was more involved in wanting this aggressive treatment, or is it or is the patient they were asked to
I think a lot of it is just patient education. If you know, it's not a comfortable discussion to have, so people don't have it. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of things end up being done at the end of life, like ICU stays, admissions, you know, tubes and lines, that really the patient hasn't had time to process and think through, just because we don't have the conversation with them early on enough.
Are there other questions? Well, thank you very much. I've enjoyed all the presentations. We're a small group, but we had some good questions. Travels back home.